From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast.
I think it's about time for me to hit these against the upside of the head with some of that West Coast gangsta shit.
Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com.
You hear the bass from the truck when I'm on the block.
Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh, back from vacation and better than ever. We kick things off with a little Wicket the Instigator in honor of this very special hour-long program. This episode of the show was recorded at the EDM Workshop at Summer Camp Music Festival back on May 25th and featured a stunning panel of artists, DJs, and producers from across the electronic music spectrum. It was so much fun. I had Jesse Miller from Lotus on the panel, Spankalicious, DJ Solo, and of course Wicket, Andrew Owsley, who had just arrived on site and then had to rush and go do his set. We had a great crowd. I really enjoyed meeting fans of the program. This was just a blast, so please excuse the poor audio quality. It was just a mic'd room in a beautiful church. Just enjoy this conversation as it is. It's for nerds, people who love this electronic and dance music scene. We've got a live demo from Jesse as Beer to Bees. It's just a ton of fun, and I hope you love it as much as me.
The word to the wise, this is why you wear sunscreen every day. I used to be white. So what we have here at Summer Camp is a perfect opportunity to bring together people from all sorts of genres of music. And is this the first year we're doing EDM?
Yes.
Perfect. It can only go uphill from here. So obviously you guys have seen the lineups shift. You've seen them shift from very jam heavy, and we've seen a lot of DJs and producers come in. So it's good that we have these sorts of opportunities to see what people are doing, and we can get as technical as Joel and Joe and Jordan and all the guys from the Keys Workshops. We can get technical, but don't direct any of that to me. For the first half of this year, we're going to talk very generally about the scene. And like I said, Summer Camp gives us a very good opportunity to bring together people not only from all sorts of genres, but when we talk about electronic dance music, we've got producers who make beats. We've got people like Jesse who come from a jam background who are getting into production from a whole nother mind space, and people like Dave who are still spinning vinyl, which still exists, contrary to popular thought. So for the first half here, like I said, let's keep it non-technical for my sake. I just want to talk about the scene. And let's start with you, Dave. You played the Vibe Tent last night, and like you said, you did a rock and roll set. If you were out at the Vibe Tent last night, you heard everything from... let's let you talk about it, because I can't remember very much from last night. Because I was very busy studying for today.
Yeah, last night I did, since I'm playing a bunch of sets here, I didn't want to just, do the same, thing again and again and again for a bunch of times. So I did all rock and roll. It was 50s, 60s, 70s, and 90s. No 80s because no good rock and roll came out.
Talking heads would disagree.
Billy Idol, I'll get to Billy Idol. But I wanted to do it like in real, same DJ style mixing and the types of different kind of transitions and blends and stuff that I do. And live, sample chopping and stuff in the same way, but just using those rock and roll songs, no hip hop beats, no electronic music, no dubstep, just rock and roll, but the same kind of style.
The kids that were getting down in the Vibe Tent, their parents were not born when some of those tunes were out. When you're crafting a set, do you automatically assume that everybody knows the same tunes that you know? Is it because you feel like at summer camp there is just a love of music on all levels, and so the people that come here and are going to get down are the ones who are studied and know their history?
Absolutely. I mean, that's not a set I would do at a rave or, a dance club in the middle of that. Maybe you throw on a song or two, or the way, I'll actually infuse that style, old rock and roll, punk rock, all different genres into my, let's say, dubstep and make remixes and stuff. That's where I'll give it to them at a rave. But, place here, You know, these kids are here for eclectic different kinds of music, from bluegrass to rock and roll to, you know, all things of all nature. They like hip hop, they like dubstep. So, you know, I feel like they grew up with their parents listening to oldies rock and roll, to their parents that listen to their parents oldies rock and roll, to where it's getting passed down. You know, you play, you know, Led Zeppelin, Steve Miller, you know, I mean, even, you know, the Ramones, I mean, anything like that, people know instantly. Not like I gotta explain to them, hey kids, here's what this is, you know what I mean? And one kid that doesn't know, he's gonna hear it for that first time, and it's gonna sound like the first time that anybody ever heard it and be like, what's this? You know what I mean? I want that. That's how music affected me, so I want to give these kids a similar experience at that.
You know? You said the D word, what's so that? Let's just get it out there. Dubstep has obviously shattered everything that we knew about electronic dance music, and is one of the reasons, not the only one, but one of the reasons for the big resurgence in electronic dance music. Obviously, the government tried to shut down electronic dance music in the 90s. You guys remember Ecstasy, right? Anyway, the government found out about it. We don't know how. But, you know, a lot of this stuff was forced underground during the early to mid 2000s, and the people who were listening to electronic dance music either moved to Europe or were forced underground. But now we see it coming back, and it's on commercials, and it's on One Tree Hill, and you can hear electronic dance music everywhere. And a lot of it is due to dubstep. Do you feel pressure to give the kids what they want?
Yes and no. Traditionally, what I do specifically is I don't really pay attention to anything that's going on or feel pressured to do anything that's going on to, you know, be a part of anything. You know, like, I'm not trying to be like, hey, I'm going to do exactly what everybody likes so I'll be popular. Like, you know, the same thing when you go to school. You know, don't be something that you're not to make everybody like you. Just do you. And that's what I've always tried to do, to where, like, I like dubstep. When it first, you know, when it started hitting and, you know, exploding, you know, I was right there and into it just like a fan, you know. So I was excited about it. And that's what I wanted to play. And I wanted to be like, hey, not only is this a fun style of music, but I noticed that the kids who listened to that were, like you said, eclectic, studied. They knew I could put, you know, rock and roll into a dubstep and make these mashups and stuff, and they were like, hell yeah. Whereas in hip hop, you did, they're like, oh, what's this? This isn't hip hop. What's this guy doing? Get off the stage. You know, so it was like a totally different kind of a shift. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. I could tell you wanted to jump in there, Kevin. And first, I got to thank you for giving a 2.5-minute commercial to the Unz during your set. To all of you artists out there, that's a lesson. Maybe get on a panel if you do some plugging. But I mean, I imagine you even said some things during your set about the type of people who are now coming into the scene and exploring it due to dubstep and bass music and how it's evolved.
I just feel like right now there's like dubstep is, it's on the McDonald's commercial, McBites, wah 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 wah. It's like, what, you know? And I feel like kids that are like just now getting into dubstep, like last month or like in the last 6 months, man, they're bumping the tracks that Solo and I were probably banging out back in 2008, you know. And it's like, what's happened to me with dubstep is like it's become like dubstep is like, all right, we're gonna walk into a party and we don't know what we're gonna put into our bodies, and we're gonna meet Brittany, we're gonna meet right after school, 3:30 at McDonald's, we're going to Target, we're gonna get the green pantyhose, and we're gonna cut up our shirts. You know, and like that's what dubstep has become. It's become like the PBR of, you know.
Are you disgracing PBR?
I'm not disgracing PBR, but I'm like, you know,
metaphor.
I mean, that's what it is. It's like
USA Today.
To me, like dubstep felt good. Like that's why people like they felt that bass and it felt good. And like now, like dubstep is like Chainsaw Massacre, and it's like. That, you know, I hear people leaving their high school parking lot, you know, it's like, here's another, you know, it's like, you know, and it's just like, I don't know, whenever I come to one of these things, like when we do this type of thing and we come together as a mass, I like to feel good, you know, like I'm not paying $200 to come here and get my ears raped by Mr. I Can't Mix Rusko, you know, that's not what I, you know, I mean, and that happens a lot, dude, and that's definitely what happens, you know. It's like, okay, yeah, I want to become a DJ. I'm a Beatport account, I got my PC, I got MIDI controller, I'm going to go to the top 40, and it's like, that's what it is, and it's like, that's what dubstep to me has become.
But
now,
I think that's kind of the nature of any kind of style that gains a lot of popularity very fast, and we've seen this with a lot of other styles, is is that there's not the same kind of gatekeeping that would happen. So you have some either producers or DJs or other stuff rising much faster than they normally would if it didn't have so much popularity. Mm-hmm. So with anything, I mean, you talk about pop music, there's a lot of great pop music, but 95% of it, or maybe more, is just complete trash. So that's the same thing in all electronic genres. It's not just dubstep. You talk about house, like I'm a big house fan, but there is a ton of house that is just unlistenable.
Garbage.
Yeah, so, and I think it's easy to pick on dubstep because it is super popular right now, but I think you can go through any genre or any kind of electronic music that has seen its heyday, and you just see a lot of people grabbing onto it because of that and a lot of stuff. And, you know, that's not to say all of it's bad or that all of it's good. That's just not a good approach for any type of music.
Andrew, welcome in. We're talking shit about dubstep.
Oh, okay,
great. And this is actually an indication of how bad of a host I am. I haven't introduced my panel even. I apologize. Here, walking in, fresh off the private jet, Wicket the Instigator. We also have DJ Solo, Jesse from Lotus, Beer to Bees, and Spangalicious. But yeah, let's get back into it. Jesse, you're talking about how, you know, dubstep has sort of come along and redefined itself as a new brand of pop music. But you are operating, and this is no offense taken, you're operating from a position of coming from a style of music that has been traditionally under the radar, jam. Do you think you could tell me briefly, I know it's a long story, but briefly the evolution of Lotus, as I imagine was a quote-unquote jam band back in the Goshen days, mm-hmm. Evolving to incorporating electronic dance music into an act that has guitars and drums and organic instruments.
Yeah, so even early on in Lotus, we were influenced by electronic music. We listened to a lot of... I mean, I went to high school in the late 90s, and that was when there was a big explosion in the rave scene, and the Chemical Brothers were coming out, and you had Daft Punk on like alternative radio, and it just seemed like this whole new thing. And so we were kind of I wasn't really immersed in it, but in some ways you would hear it, and it was not the same level or same position it is today, but it was something where, like, oh, every commercial has this drum and bass song, and it seemed like all over. And you heard, if you were just getting introduced to it, a lot of it seemed terrible. And then someone turned me on to The Orb and Underworld and some groups like that that just, for me, blew it wide open and said, like, oh, there's this crazy groove here that's going on that we want to like do something similar to that. And we thought it as a way to expand what we were doing. So initially, when we were taking ideas from that music, it was more about, you know, we just played our guitars and our basses, and we weren't really delving too far into the electronic production side.
Were you emulating it with your instruments?
Yes, to some degree. We were saying, like, how can we take these grooves and apply it to our style? And because we already had this sort of extended kind of groove thing when we started that we wanted to, like, spin out into other things. So when we heard some of these beats, we're like, oh, you know, we can kind of take some of these ideas. And I think it really progressed from there. We started bringing in more synths, and Luke went from playing a synthesizer every once in a while to now he plays almost exclusively synth and piano and some guitar, even though he majored in classical guitar in college. Yeah, so the guy can play a pretty mean guitar, but he really does now. And yeah, I got more into producing, and been going down that, and I started using a sampler in the sets, so then we started writing for that. So it was a very slow progression of, okay, how can we, I want to bring in this particular sound, how can we do that? And then we would start writing for that. So it was always tied to live performance for us, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
We would start with, how can we make this sound? And then it's like, oh, how can we write with that new tool that we've developed? And it's always moved along from that to the point where now I think we have a really adept system where we can use sampled elements and things that we don't have any good way of performing live, Or find ways to, you know, perform that stuff live, either using samplers or synths or things like that. So now I think we found like a really good blend that works well for us.
Absolutely, absolutely. So Andrew, let's let you jump in here. You came from a completely different world. I understand hip hop was the basis of your introduction to electronic music and maybe turntablism and hip hop in that form was your introduction.
Yeah, I started off doing DJ battles before I was even doing gigs, you know, scratching up and all that. So and I've just, you know, even before I DJ, I've always been a huge hip hop head. So that was, as far as DJing goes, I grew up on all kinds of music, but as far as DJing goes, that was how I got my intro, absolutely. And, you know, I still do a lot of hip hop.
What'd you think of dance music? Was that just something that was off limits to you, or did you have to listen to House secretly on your headphones?
What's really crazy, I moved to Nashville in 98, and in 98 and 99, they were still having great big raves, like mm-hmm. old school style, the ones that you hear old people talking about now.
I'm not that good.
But what was weird when I look back is that I used to go to them and I had a blast. But I never thought, like, who was playing, what kind of music was that, where can I get that? There was a huge disconnect. I was never like, I want to listen to this at home. What DJ was that? I'd go, dance, have a good time, and that would be it. And I'd go home and, like, listen to Lean. and, you know, and watch Caddyshack and do whatever it is I do.
Watching Caddyshack and listening to Ween makes Andrew not only the nerdiest person here, but the most average person.
That is true, though. I've never, I was, you know, the short answer to the question, I was kind of neutral to it.
Yeah.
I was never like, oh, dance music, I don't like that. Like I said, there were times in my life I had a great time, but I never got into it. I never really cared about it.
There was a disconnect then, but why is there not that disconnect now? You're dropping electro, you're dropping hip-hop, you're dropping house in your sets, and you can get away with it. Why is that? Is that the internet? Or is it...
Well, there's a lot of things. Like, my ear changed for one. Like, you know, becoming a producer, when I first started producing, I was making hip-hop. But like a real, you know, Second Records, RZA, Wu-Tang, DJ Premier style beat-making was what I started doing when I was producing. So eventually I realized that the guys that were really good at making electronic music were like evil geniuses. Mm-hmm. Like there's so, it's so much more involved as far as like making it sound good over a big system.
Sure.
And then I started to realize how like, even though I love a lot of hip hop, a lot of it's super lo-fi, kind of two-dimensional, and but it's dope, I love it, but you know, that really kind of, I guess when I started becoming more of like a sound nerd, like a technical, you know, compression mastering, blah, 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 side-chaining nerd was when I really started to appreciate a lot of electronic music just because of how it sounded, you know. It was almost like seeing your first 3D movie or something. Like, wow, that's dope. Like, how do they do that? You know, so a lot of it was that. Dubstep, I love dubstep when it came out because I'm from you know, Kentucky, Tennessee. I grew up with a lot of Dirty South hip hop, and Fandango techno music doesn't slow down to my tempo. You know, it was slow and grinding. I was like, I can kind of feel that shit.
Yeah.
So you know, that opened up the world too, because I you know, 3 or 4 years, you know, maybe like 2009-ish, you know, kind of fell in love with dubstep. I want to learn how to make it. But learning how to make it meant learning electronic music in general. I didn't really realize that until I was sort of in the middle of it. Kind of realized I didn't know shit about producing, even though I thought I'd been doing big bangs for years and years. I was like, I don't know shit. Like,
at the risk of this delving into some sort of nerd language that I can't understand, do you feel like you're at an advantage over maybe some of the 13, 14, 15-year-old producers that are hitting it big now who have never seen a turntable, let alone know what the word vinyl means? Do you feel like you're in an advantage?
I don't know, man. I mean, you know, vinyl and turntables, that's part of my heart, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the path that everyone needs to take. Mm-hmm. You know, so no, not really. Like, I've never really felt like my way was the right way, and I'm not really like an old cane waving man, like you can't make you do things the proper way. You know, I learn things from people of all ages and generations, whether it's a dude that's 50 or whether it's a kid that's 18, he's like twerking Ableton in some crazy way that like freaks me out, like, you know, so. I don't think really. There might be like idiosyncrasies and little advantages maybe, but on the grand scheme of things, not really. I mean,
sure.
Can I chime in as the old cane waving man for a I think you're kind of talking about performance in a way, but I think there has been a generational shift just in terms of sound, and the music that's coming out now, for the most part, it's all produced digitally, and a lot of it's produced digitally. You hear it digitally on MP3s or something, and I think younger people are at a disadvantage because they haven't heard what like true analog sounds like, and like what a
you're gonna tell me about the warmth of analog now?
Yeah, I know like this is a long running debate and amongst a lot of people, and I'm clearly in the digital world. I mean, I do this thing too, but like for me, there is a very big sonic difference between what comes off of a record and what comes out of your iPod. And the same thing with what comes out of a soft synth and what comes out of a real analog synthesizer. And so sometimes I feel like as like slightly older than a lot of these kids that are coming to electronic festivals, be like in some ways reminding people like you need to like listen to what it sounded like. There's something there. You're missing something with this new digital sound.
Sure. Dave, as someone who is still spinning vinyl,
I don't.
You don't?
No. But here's the thing.
Is this embarrassing for me?
No. But it's actually a good point because, and here's why. I did spin vinyl. I mean, not vinyl, but like literally, I literally spun vinyl, you know, all growing up as a DJ. But then when like Serato came out, it took a time coded vinyl. But it's still vinyl turntables. I was a turntablist. Like my story is like his story exactly. Like, you know, hip hop turntables. That's all I did. Didn't listen to electronic music and all that. So switching over that for me was a bunch of different reasons. One, I started to get to where like I wanted to do stuff like production-wise that was more like stuff I could only do on a mixtape with production and things like that, but I wanted to do it live and I had the accessories to do it now, so I wanted to do it. And you know, Serato was like the step up to that. But then also playing shows like this, live shows, when you use vinyl and needles, that shit, oh sorry, I don't get to swear in the church. I'm sorry. But you know, you're gonna get dust all over your needles, the thing starts skipping, the thing starts going where like you'll hear the beagle.
Like, technology advances for a reason.
Vietnam flashbacks about how
yeah, it really, and, like, and not only that, but
I see it turns out when my heart rate goes.
When you spin heavy bass, when you spin the bass music, well, a lot of people aren't
sure. Doing
this, those bass frequencies will rattle your needle off. The subs under the stage, you're like, and it's game over. Now you look like you don't know how to DJ when you know you practice these mixes for 5 hours in your bedroom. So it's just like, you know, so at some point I'm like, okay, look, I need myself to be stable, but then the flip side of that is, in my opinion, none of these controllers, nothing that I've used is stable, nothing meets the standards that I feel like should be at right now. I mean, you know, I'm like, where's my hoverboard? You know what I mean?
But yeah.
It's just like, you know, like that's how I always feel because
I'm looking
I feel like everything out now is 5 years ago in my mind, you know what I mean? Where it's like, they should be way in different.
I'm glad you talked about rib cage rattling bass. Kevin, you talked about some of these DJs today being all about ripping your face off with bass. I saw Excision at the Limelight in Nashville, that 100,000-watt sound system rattling the cups on the bar, and I couldn't breathe. My teeth were falling out. Have we reached the apex of that? Is this the new heavy metal where people just going to slam something down your throat until you give up and you throw your hands up? Have we hit the apex of that?
I think I'm going to be like 60 years old and I still won't know 30% of this software. You know what I'm saying? I feel like there's so much more that hasn't even been made yet that we didn't know was going to be made yet because it hasn't been made yet.
Right.
It's really like, I don't know, man. I mean, to go real quick to what these guys were talking about, turntables. I started on turntables too, and my reason for getting rid of turntables and going to this thing, and people are like, "Oh, you don't spin vinyl anymore. You're not DJ." You know, it's like, it's because, strictly because, like, I like to rock parties and I like to make sure we're having fun. Like, we like to have fun. And it became a thing where my fat ass is making the needle skip. Yeah. And it's like, all of a sudden, you know. So it's like, you know, basically, like, what I'm doing over here, basically, dude, is mixing the same way. It's all the same thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but as far as, like the bass tones and, like, you're talking, you know, the
I'm talking about the house is you feel insecure with the architectural strength of a building.
Oh, yeah.
Have we hit a wall? I mean, how much heavier can it be until the DJ is just walking around punching people in the face? Like, have we gone too far, or have we not gone far enough? I mean, or do you feel like
I mean,
we're close? We haven't had the technology to do it all at the same time, but
I mean, like, function one, dude, is one thing too, man. I mean, I think really, I think, you know, the more generators you top stack, I mean, we could make it as big as
we can make it.
I mean, we could keep making a Star Trek spaceship a base if we wanted to really get
turned into Spot and Tap.
Right, right. But it's like, you know, I feel like it's definitely at that point to where, like, your ass better be showing up to a show with earplugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you should not be showing up to a show without earplugs if you're going to walk into 100,000 watts for 3 hours straight. Stupid. That's the one thing that doesn't grow back is
right.
Your ear hairs. The one sense of your body that cannot be repaired, does not grow back after it's injured, is your ears, kids. You know what I'm saying? We love bass, but we don't love our ears. So I'm just saying, like, you know.
Yeah, it does seem kind of crazy. It, you know, like, I understand it, though. I think it depends, like, how much you go to concerts. But, like, when I'm at a show, whether it's a rock and roll show or an electronic show, you want to feel it. But there are safety concerns for sure. Like,
mm-hmm.
You can not, I mean, not only with your ears,
and that's
but
a
when you're getting pummeled
by
bass, it's like, it's actually like, it's shaking your insides in ways that are not healthy for extended periods of time.
Sure.
I don't know. I think it's a concern, but I mean, you still want that experience. You want to be hit with something.
No, I'm not upset about getting moved by a bass, but I caught your set this afternoon, and I feel like what you're doing is almost this post-bass frenzy sort of music. People that have gone to that point, that have hit that bass apex, and you're like, yes, you have hit me with the force of a bass drop. But now I need something that's going to speak to me on a cerebral level.
Yeah,
it's
conscious.
A little smarter. Sure.
Yeah, conscious bass is what I call it, man. I mean, there's so many more tones and frequencies that aren't being covered in the There's so much more out there in the spectrum of bass music, dude.
Uh-huh.
That just like, I mean, just like, you know, some of these 18-year-old kids, dude, are just like, I'm glad they got off their Xbox because they are schooling us. And it's kind of crazy, like, how some of these kids are just like, It's ridiculous, man. I'm scared of some of these 18-year-olds, man, because of the fact that they can sit down for 15 minutes and, like, you know, it's over. It's a wrap.
Right.
You know, there's so many knobs to tweak now, you know. It's just like you got to either watch the YouTube videos, do the thing, you know. I mean, but what is awesome about it is as it's blowing up, man, is it's causing us as a humanity, at least I think in our culture right now in America, to step away from the Xbox and pick up something positive, even if you're going to be not doing this as a career, if this is just something to, like, grab some sanity and some grounding in life, you know. And I know that's one thing it's done for me. I mean, this shit saved my life, you know. So, I mean, the bigger picture of it is, like, yeah, it's awesome because, like, now anybody can feel like they can bring a performance and be that guy, you know, for the people. You know, it's awesome to see it growing, man. It's past DJ Hero. I remember when DJ Hero came out, I was like, damn you, PSP. You know, but it's
think
like...
Think about how the Beatles fell.
Right, you know. I mean, definitely, but it's like, yeah, I mean, think about that. It's like, you couldn't just go out and get a guitar, but now you can just, I mean, $300 and $50 used, and get a crack copy of Ableton, and it's just like that, you know. And I mean, I hate that at the same point, but at the same point, it's like, if it's doing something positive, man, for individuals, which I see it happening all the time, is these things like blow up by 5,000 people each year. You know what I'm saying? It's obvious that it's becoming more of it's not just about the music. It's about, like, it's becoming a change in the feng shui of
sure.
People.
I think Jesse mentioned that earlier. He was talking about gatekeeping. There's essentially nothing preventing you from getting your music out to everybody. That's what the internet's for. There's no record label that needs to sign you. They don't need to put up money for you to go into a studio. You buy the computer, you buy the software, or there's something called Torrent, and you steal that shit. And you put your internet, and you put your music out on the internet, and boom, it goes viral, and there's no gatekeeping. And so, yes, there are 1,000 times over, you know, there's so many more producers, so many more people out there making music. And so now we have this sort of flood into the market. I'd like to hear maybe how you can rise above. I'd like to hear that from Jesse and then Wicket after that.
I don't really have the answers. You see some people pop up and go from nothing to gigantic overnight sometimes, but I think those are really rare cases. It's frustrating to me sometimes when I see news reports of like, hey, Pretty Lights gave his music away for free and now he sells out stadiums. Why don't you do that? You know, you're like, okay, there's a million people giving their music away for free and they don't all sell out every place they go.
Sure.
So sometimes I think it's tricky to try to look at that by a case-by-case basis because some things are a matter of like right place, right time. But ultimately, I think the way to go about it is if you're making something, you can't just upload your YouTube video and expect a million people to come watch it. I think a lot of the old methods still apply, like touring and putting in that kind of groundwork that you need to make the connections. I don't think those have gone away.
Andrew, you're coming off of the release of Grindhouse Bastards, your tribute to Quentin Tarantino, that did achieve that sort of viral success that we're talking about. What do you think about that sort of freedom to put something out that you love, essentially for free? Was that for free download?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That gives you obviously an open platform to just put your music out there, but have you seen any drawbacks from that? Or is it just like, everybody listens to my music, now I can, you know, I get those bigger shows, people are looking at me for bigger festivals. Is it just like, you know, is that the way to go? And Jesse was saying maybe that's not the way for everyone, but for you, obviously, that was.
Well, I think it can be a combo. I mean, like, you know, everybody's got a tour and banging out a little bit. I mean, there are a few cases of somebody that's got super lucky and like woke up one day and was famous.
You worked your ass off.
Yeah, I'm like 73 years old. No, but I tell you what, where I live in Nashville, and Nashville is in a way kind of like the internet, and what I mean by that is there's an overkill of music going on. Everybody who lives in Nashville has a studio in their house, they're either a singer, a rapper, a songwriter, DJ, blah, blah, blah. Kind of like the internet. And to me, it's a blessing and a curse. Like, the curse part is there's just tons of shit everywhere. You just, like, listen to music, and you're like, oh, this is also awful. But me, I'm kind of like a competitive person. I think it makes people, to rise above all that white noise, you almost kind of have to, like, come as good as you possibly can to kind of break through all that white noise and all that surplus of music. And that's kind of how it is where I live in Nashville, you know, because like I said, everybody's doing it. So to kind of make a splash, you got to really make a big splash to kind of even make a blip on the radar. And I think that's a lot like the internet. Like you know, I've heard people release shit that's just amazing, just genius, and you know, and then it makes a little blip on the radar. It does pretty good, not as good as I think that artist might deserve, but it's, you know, it I think it makes you struggle harder. I mean, things used to be, you know, before the internet, I think all the labels were just robbing all the musicians blind anyway. I think it's become a lot more do-it-yourself. There's a lot less middleman. You look at somebody like Radiohead, they put out their album, they get all the money. That money isn't going to like putting a new wing on the office of Arista Records or whatever.
Sure.
And flying people around in private helicopters. It's just like fans, money, Radiohead. You know, and like that side of the internet, I think, is really good.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's like everything. It's a blessing and a curse. You know, you got the thing about stuff like that, internet technology, whatever. It is what it is. All you can do is tweak it to your advantage. other than that, then, you know, you're just kind of shooting yourself in the foot if you want to be, like, sour about it. Like, that's not going to accomplish anything either. Like, things are what they are. It's like you just got to look at it and try to do the best with how it is, you know.
Absolutely.
Right now, everybody's a DJ, everybody's a producer. It's good and bad, you know.
There you go, folks. We've learned nothing today. I apologize. We could talk about this forever, but this is a conference for nerds, so we should get to some technical stuff. I'm going to have a couple of these guys do short, quick little demos. We don't have a projector, so if there is something technical that happens and you want to take a look at it, feel free to come up, peek over somebody's shoulder and see what's up. We're going to have Kevin go first and talk about his little thing that he does. We'll switch over to Dave to give a brief talk on some things that that might help people who are beat matching and mixing, and then we can switch over the PA to Jesse so he can do some stuff. And I understand, Wicket, you got a show at 7 in the Vibe Tent?
Yeah.
7 in the Vibe Tent tonight. So if you got to take off and do your thing, feel free to slip out. But we will have short little question and answer after they do their thing, so hold your questions if you have them. We'll try and run through this and stay on schedule somehow. But
could we just take a quick show of hands, like who, if people are like producing on their own, or
absolutely,
like,
yeah, absolutely,
DJ, or
yeah. Sure. Are anybody out here? Anybody producing? Okay, you got a few. Okay, cool. Yeah. If you want to come and step up here and look over the shoulder, and the rest of us, we can just enjoy from the wings here. So sure. Kevin, I'll leave it up to you.
Okay.
If you're looked up and ready to go.
So me, what I do, dude, I rock parties. Okay, that's what I do. Okay, I'm a DJ. I'm a drummer. Like I'm a classically trained percussionist that went and was a band director for 3 years just to figure out this is not at all what the hell I want to do, but I still love this whole music thing. And it's like, I don't know, just, you know, this dude came over with some turntables. Next thing I know, it was 10 hours later, and my wife was like, if you buy some of those turntables, we're getting divorced. And here it is 5 years later, and we're playing summer camp with a MIDI controller and my awesome girlfriend over there. So, okay, so, I mean, basically what I do, man, so, like, I wanted to incorporate, like, the whole drumming thing to it, so that's what I do, man. It's like, that's what I can afford right now, man. Usually, like, my live setup, I have this drum pad that has samples into it, man. You know, we add a little flavor on top, man. It gives the live element to it, you know what I'm saying? We get on the microphone, and it's basically, like, if you're comfortable on the microphone, basically, if you have a crowd in front of you, anything you say on the microphone, they're gonna do. Like, if you were at the set today, it's like, I said, put your hands in the air, like, 15 times. People put their hands in the air 15 times, you know, and it's that simple. It's just like, that's in particular what I do. Like, I've started to do some production, like, now recently within the last year and a half, which is like, I sat on Ableton, man. I sat on a crack copy of Ableton forever. I was sitting there doing Serato back and forth, wiggy, you know, because Ableton, you open it up, and it's just like, oh my God, what, you know, it's like opening the Matrix and eating the red and the blue pill at the same time, you know, and you don't know which way to go. Especially, you know, like, I felt blessed because I had a musical background, but at the same point, it's like, having a musical background to some of these kids, it doesn't matter because they just, well, it sounds like this. You know, how are you getting it out that quick? So, I mean, what I'm doing, like I was talking about, yeah, dude, we rock parties. We started on turntables, and I like to jump up and down because it turned out when I was doing that and I was doing what the music felt like, it's like, being the orchestra conductor of the rave is what I do. You know what I'm saying? I get up there. If I do it, you're going to get hyphy. I guarantee it. I guarantee it every time. So it's basically like, you know, song selection, knowing what to say to the crowd. I mean, that's specifically what I come to do every time, is like, feel good about it. And like, now I'm starting to get more of my own productions into it, man. And we're starting to, like, you know, tour more, getting more collabs going. And it's just like, basically, I don't know. I feel like my story is totally like, you know, if you want to change something about your life, man, then you really can. You know what I'm saying? You really can. Like, if you gave up on your dream, you might as well go ahead and turn around and give it another shot, because why not?
What else is there to do?
Why not? You know what I'm saying? And I'm having a good time doing this. I get all exclusive tracks now. I get all exclusive, like, opportunities for collaborations. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, that's awesome. It's like everything that I imagined it would never be is like happening just because, like, you know, we kept doing it and we didn't stop. And like, you know, those shows where you don't get paid anything and you're going to figure out how to get gas to the next show just because you want to get your fat face seen out there and you know what I'm saying?
Dance
you
just, monkey.
It's like, if you want to do something, man, the only person that's going to do it is yourself. You know what I'm saying? That's if you want to learn how to perform, if you want to learn how to produce, if you want to learn how to, you know, do internet porn. I don't know. You know, I mean, anything that you want to do, I mean, it's up to us. You know what I'm saying? So this is what I do in particular. I don't know. You look at my screen real quick. It's not really hard.
Oh, not too far.
Not too far. Okay. I have 16 pads. I have a block of 16 songs here. Okay. All my tracks are, see how they're like pretty colors? Because I color code it off of BPMs, similar to what a DJ would do if they had vinyls back in the day and they were gonna, you know, mark all their records and their vinyls. Oh, this is this BPM, this and this is this key. And like now, you know, it's like, you know, you have all the software that can tell you the BPM and the key right off the bat, man. So it's like, you know, have that stuff. But ultimately, only thing I can say, last thing I can say is like, if you are gonna get Ableton and you're gonna act like you're just gonna hop into DJing or like rocking parties, don't do that. Really, learn how to mix first. Go find somebody that has some turntables or some CDJs or some sort of mixing. Like, you need to understand like beat structure. You need to understand, there's certain things you need to understand before you can just jump into it. Otherwise, every single track that you throw down is going to be a double beat and you're going to be that DJ that was DJ Succubus all weekend. You know, so it's a really simple thing. I'm going to be at the Grassroots Dome all weekend, literally kicking it. And if you guys have any questions, please feel free.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Dave, if you want to take that lead and talk about the art of mixing, if you would, if you can boil it down, which you can.
So what I was going to talk about a little bit was my style being, what I like to do is take the most interesting parts of the songs and the parts of the songs that, you know, structurally go together and cubicle them out to where I can rearrange songs. You know, it's pretty much similar to what people do with Ableton Live. You know, you have, you know, I don't use that. I use like a Serato-based program, which is there's several different ones. But anyways, cue pointing is you know, assigning a cue point to like a spot in the song. Like, let's say right at the very beginning, I'll make a cue point because that's right where it starts. Then, you know, there's a part where it drops or something like that. But then let's say there's some cool little interesting part down the way a little bit that maybe I have to wait 2 minutes before it gets to that. I might want to just jump to there at any point. I'll make a little thing there so on my buttons I can always jump to that. That way I kind of know how songs are structured. That's what kind of what he was saying. You know, understanding song structure. It's not just about getting a bunch of tracks and hitting play or whatever you do, or even if you have turntables. It's about understanding that structurally, you know, music is music, and you know, different music has different structures. Electronic music has certain structures. Rock and roll has certain structures. You know, pop music has a certain structure, and that's why it's pop music. So understanding those differences will, you know, I can rearrange a song in any way that I want. So for example, you know, I'll have songs that everybody's playing, but I don't have to play them the same way. I don't have to let them play out to, you know, sometimes I think I'll get these tracks that were made by a 16-year-old kid who maybe, you know, made an awesome sound, but, you know, structurally this is garbage. But, you know, if you move this here, you take this and repeat it twice here and then change that up, now it's awesome. You know what I mean? Where it's like, he didn't know that, but as a producer who's been producing music, studying music, listening to music, and I'm a musician as well, I play instruments, I think like that, and that's something that will give you an edge over anybody else who's doing it, you know, rather than just having a bunch of music and like, here, I'm going to blend this song right here where this is going about to end and then this one starts. That's one way, and that's not, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's just one drop in a bucket of ways you can blend music together. And by creating sections, you know, Ableton, what these guys uses that as well. You can mark up, like, here's my intro on every song. You can label that, make it a color. You can make all your drops this color, and you have those in sections to where at any point, let's say you want to do a build, you're doing your own build, now it's two different intros over the tops of each other, and then I'm going to drop, I got all my drops in this column, I'm going to go here, boom, and then drop however you want. It doesn't have to be the drop from that song. It could be, you know, how whatever your mind can make. You know, if you understand music and structure, you can rebuild that into, you know, your own canvas or whatever you want to put on. So that's kind of what I do, and that's the science behind it.
Can I ask something about, because I'm not very familiar with Serato.
Yeah.
So when, for your cue points, so if I'm guessing most people understand, but Serato is a system where you're using a controller that looks like a record, but you're actually control, it has time code, so you're actually manipulating that and a digital file is playing.
Right.
So for your pre-production, Are you taking full tracks and cutting them up, or you're just setting
like
specific
hot
points,
right,
and you use your controller to jump to them?
Right. So the difference being, like, for example, like Serato, what I use versus like Ableton, in the way that you kind of have like preordained sections and you're kind of like triggering them. This is more of like live cueing, and sometimes I do what I call drumming, which is, you know, literally marking places that I'm
like a hit.
Like hits, yeah. So it's like I'm doing that in real time, and sometimes I'll even do where like I have a kick on one, a snare on one. So instead of just, you know, dropping the beat over this, while this one's going, I can play the drums and do kicks and snares and play a drum beat, and then right when I want to have these songs mixed, I can put two different parts, boom, down at the same time. So it jumps you to a piece of the song. I don't have to do that much like pre-production as much as just going through and going, hey, I like this part. Oh, I want to make sure I play this thing at the end that I would never get to, because I'd usually mix out here, and just being able to jump there live anytime I want. It's sort of like a more hands-on version of this.
Cool. So you're more of a librarian. You know the card catalog numbers. I'm trying to take the coolest thing you can do, being a DJ, to the nerdiest thing you can do and draw that connection. But essentially, you know the coding. You know the system. You've sort of mapped it out so you can go wherever you want.
And what I do, it's less of a coded system than, for example, Ableton, where I'm like, they have their like columns of sections, where mine, I'm just playing a song, just like you would see, you know, a song in a WAV file or whatever. You see how the song looks.
Sure.
I'm literally seeing how that song looks, you know, with another song that's playing. And I just, you know, you can see the layout of the track in the program, and you can see visually where those things are. So you don't really have to, like, I mean, I know my music and I take time to know it. But, I mean, it's like if I put on a song, I'm like, oh, I don't remember how this goes, I can look and see, okay, there's cue point here, 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 and here, and they're numerically where those are, so I can be like, oh, yeah, I can listen to it in the headphones and check it out. Oh, yeah, the end part, I got to go start with that or something, you know?
I think DJ that used to spend vinyl, you know, like me and him and him, like, I think we're the ones that really, like, take advantage of cue point because it was, like, the shit we always wanted to be.
Yeah, right, you couldn't do that before.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like if you have an 8-minute song, first minute's dope, last minute's dope, everything in the middle's kind of boring, then
two guys
drop it, and then after a minute, hit your cue point, first dope minute, last dope minute, and then move on to the next song. Because you know, we don't want to just stand there and just be like, what is that?
Twisting the knife. Twisting the knife in the heart of the musicians who pour their blood, sweat, and tears with that track. This part's good, fuck the metal.
But it's relevant, though, because it's like, you know, those produce that, you know, they'll hear that and maybe they'll be like, structurally, this is not what I did, but like that totally moves a lot differently.
Sure.
But that whole concept, it's a hip-hop thing. It's like when hip-hop started, they were taking like disco and funk and soul records, and, you know, at the last third of the song, there was a little 4-bar, 8-bar drum break and just
funky drummer, baby,
you know, and looping it. And that was it. And that became hip hop. You know what I mean? So it's like, I feel like, to me, that's how dubstep is. It's like, those are like old funk songs to me, where I'll be like, hey, this part's cool. And the rest of it's just, you know, a bunch of robots, you know, punching each other in the face.
In space.
But it's like, you know what I mean? But it's like, there's parts that are like sometimes more emotional, more, you know, than just the standard way that the song's laid out. And you can restructure that into something that's a new experience for somebody that might have heard that song, heard the DJ over at the other tent play it 5 minutes ago, but, you know, you might have just blown his mind with the way you dropped it somehow.
Sure. And for the sole member of the panel who is more commonly known as the bass player for Lotus, we have, moving into the production realm with Beer to Bees, let's hear how you do, Jesse.
Yeah, so when I was putting together Beer to Bees' live set, one thing that was important to me was to come up with a unique way to perform music. I mean, I'm sure all of you have seen someone come in front of you with a laptop, go like this and wave their hands around. They're obviously not doing anything, and I've stood behind their laptops. I know that almost none of them are doing it. So for me, as a musician, that's not interesting, but for other people, it can be a great show. So not to downplay those people's production techniques, but just for me, it was important to put together something that is going to keep me involved while I'm performing live and also hopefully be engaging for the crowd. So I've been getting into these grid controllers. If you can see this one, this is called a Mono. This is called a Launchpad. And basically, they're just what they sound like. They're grids of buttons, and you can do anything you want with them. So let me see if I can get something going through here.
Do we have them running to the PA?
Yeah, that's right.
You got to run your own sound now.
Don't worry, I'm good at that. Okay.
And if you want to come up and take a look at this,
yeah, that's fine. you all might not understand it anyway, but that's fine to look at. So basically what we have going on here is I take my own songs and cut them up into distinct parts. So what I've got going on right now is just one of my drum loops. And a lot of times I usually use four different tracks for my stuff, usually drums, bass, and then two for, one's usually like synths and one is usually either vocals or other synths or extra things. And so that's what I have set up in Ableton to play. Then I also am chopping up different parts and I have them on set up on this controller. So if you can see here, there's a lot of different sounds. And this will all make sense when I start playing the song. So I'm using this controller to launch different sections. So right now, I would normally, if I'm during a set, I would be using this drum loop as a transition for something else. So if I need to change tempo or something, I have some effects over here so I can change some things around while that's going on. And then here I'm launching into the next part. So maybe if you can, I don't know, is it hard to see when it's on the table here? I don't know, but I'll try to show what's going on.
Come on up, people, don't be shy. You know you want to see this.
Thank you. for my set, I usually use a mixer too, so I can tweak other things while it's going on. I have this broken out, and like these different stems would be broken out into different channels in the mixer. So it gives me a little bit more flexibility.
I actually have a question about that. Like, if you're like recording a performance, like you just rocking out for 5 minutes, mm-hmm. like you can record it on there, like track that separately, like draw MIDI. Like, could you go basically, like, could you like record a performance and then go back in and like tweak it a little bit, like if you're like rhythmically loose here and there, whatever, blah blah blah.
Sure, you could. That's not usually how I produce. Like for me, this is like strictly a performance tool.
Right.
And I actually mostly produce in Pro Tools and sometimes use controllers like this. But for me, like the MIDI stuff is much more of a performance tool than a writing or.
Right. I've always wished I could have something like that to where, like say if I just produce a song the way I normally do, it's completely done, I had all my sounds, all my instruments, a way to have, like.
I'm pretty sure be you able to do that.
Yeah, you can record. I mean, this is just a MIDI stream.
You can assign every instrument to a track, like, yeah. Right? Like, like every section where, you know, one, your keyboard would come out tracked as one, the horn will come tracked out as one, some effect will come on another while you're doing that.
Sure, yeah, that's all possible.
I was just curious, like, that's really dope, and, I was just curious, like, there's times when I've got a whole song done that I wish I kind of had that whole song at my fingertips a little bit, because I
think broken down, so you can
I think I'd probably do a little funkier, more
remix it live, you know,
like, stuff. Arrangement, and, like, get a little freakier with it than I am just sitting there with, like, a mouse, like, doing
yeah, exactly. Around.
That's actually how Serato has a thing that didn't really kind of pop off, because it was sort of like, you know, Betamax, it was an awesome idea, but it didn't work in the market at the time. But it was called The Bridge, and it was a thing where if you had Ableton and Serato, you open one, you open the other, and then Ableton pops up in Serato. But one of the cool things about that was just having that, you could open Serato and hit record and record your mix, and it would track it out in Ableton separately. Everything you did, if you did fader movements, it'd all be saved as automation points that you could go and change back every volume, every everything, and use the actual MP3 file, so it's like all audio is changeable.
That was the idea behind Launchpad, right? It dials into Ableton. And
if I use it in this setting called User 1, that basically just turns this into a stream of MIDI notes that is coming over here. But if you're in this session mode, if I can get down to like where some tracks are, all your clips show up as distinct buttons, and you can move around inside your set. So I would say people more often than not use this for
to launch things, rather.
Yeah, as like as similar to like the APC40, where it's a similar thing where it gives you your grid. These are clips that are, and there's this yellow triangle here or rectangle that says like, okay, this is the grid that's represented here. I sometimes use that, but I'm more interested in like turning this into something unique for me. So you can, I just run these through drum racks, if anyone who uses Ableton probably knows what that is. And then it also receives information to light up. So you can, I just have it set to turn on when I hit each button, but you can do a lot more with that. Same thing with this thing. It's like, it sends information to the computer and then you send information back to it to light up. So the lights can be a key part of not only like knowing what's going on, but I think part of the performance. So usually when I'm playing, I get these up so people can see what's going on,
sure.
and try to like connect the sounds that are coming out of the speakers to what I'm doing. Because sometimes if you, like even me, like I know a lot about these different tools. Sometimes I see people and I'm like, what the hell is that guy doing? Like, they might be doing something, they might be faking it, you don't know. So I like to know like, okay, this is producing that sound, this is tweaking that.
You made it all the way through that episode. Congratulations. You got to hear something really cool from Beer to Bees. This is his remix of Keys and Crates, Let It Rain. Special thanks go to Michael Armentrout, Dave Weissman, and Matt Butler with Summer Camp. And of course, my guests, Wicket the Instigator, Andrew Owsley, Dave Abrams, DJ Solo, Kevin Moore, a.k.a. Spankalicious, and Jesse Miller from Lotus, a.k.a. Beer to Bees. We'll bring you more special episodes like this and more interviews with your favorite artists each and every week from here on out. Please visit theunz.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the Unz podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theunz.com. That's A-N-A-N-D at theunz.com. Join the conversation at the Unz podcast on Twitter. We'll catch you next week.